New unemployment numbers are just in. What do they mean?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke. Good morning. The pace of job losses slowed way down in May. 345,000 people lost their jobs. However, that is the fewest in 8 months. Economist Peter Morici is a business professor at the University of Maryland. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
What does that improvement say to you?
Well, the pace of decline is slowing. We're approaching that third quarter bottom that all the economists are anticipating.
Well, the other part of this report, though, I should point out, is that the unemployment rate jumped up to 9.4%. So how are we supposed to feel about those two things?
Well, we don't like a high unemployment rate, but that's not necessarily the big news. The big news here is that a lot of the job losses in the private sector have been slowing. For example, we lost half as many jobs in construction, half as many jobs in retail sales. I've also been out to the Target lately and seen people shopping.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the news really is good to you overall. One more thing. Car makers are still shedding jobs, as we know. What are the key things to watch in the coming weeks and months?
Well, the key things to watch are construction and retail sales. Are people going to go back out to the malls? They got that stimulus money in April, and they'll get more of it in May. Are they going to spend it on something other than gasoline? Also, will they clear the lots off of all those extra Chryslers and General Motors vehicles hanging around?
Peter Morici at the University of Maryland, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Wall Street futures are climbing on that news. Let's do the numbers. European stocks are also up 2%. Asian markets were mostly up today. Yesterday, the Dow added 75 points, and it closed at 8,750. In other news, remember how the government was going to help banks unload some of their risky loans? The plan is called the Public-Private Investment Program. And as you can tell from the name, it assumes that private banks need the public's help. But lately, the banks have been surprisingly able to raise their own money. So the FDIC has postponed the public-private sale of $1 billion of loans. Marketplace's Amy Scott tells us the banks are hoping they can handle this alone.
If the banks sold their bad loans now, they might only get pennies on the dollar. Bart Steinfeld heads the investment banking group at real estate firm Jones Lang LaSalle. He says all the money the banks have raised lately makes it easier for them to just keep the loans on their books.
To the extent that banks are able to hold on to these loans and work it out themselves, that is clearly their preference.
So the government put its plan to help them sell those loans on hold. Tim Ryan is president of the Securities Industry and Financial Markets Association. He hopes the plan's not dead altogether.
We've just lived through a year of things happening that we did not see coming. So for me, it's very, very important that they continue doing it, which they said they're going to do, so that if we need it, we have the ability through the government to expand essentially the safety net.
Meanwhile, the Treasury is forging ahead with a plan to rid the banks of so-called legacy securities. An official says Treasury will announce the fund managers approved to run the program in the next week or two. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Monsanto, committed to sustainable agriculture, creating hybrid and biotech seeds designed to increase crop yields and conserve natural resources. Produce more, conservemore.com. And by Reuters, offering breaking news, exclusive stories, and insights that impact today's financial markets. More at newsfirst.reuters.com.
One reason newspapers are in such trouble lately is that you can so happily get your news other places. I mean, it's fun to scan the web for stories, and it's so easy to check your stocks on your cell phone. But there is one part of newspapers that does seem to go best with a cup of coffee and some crinkly newsprint, and that is the comics section. Reporter John Raby wanted to know what happens to comics if newspapers die.
Jeff Millett draws Fraz, a sweet, smart comic strip about an elementary school janitor, out of his home in Lansing, Michigan.
You dream right from the start that it could be a living. I was able to feel confident enough to go strictly full-time with Fraz after about a year of syndication.
Millett grew up reading standbys like Peanuts, and now he's making his living drawing a strip that runs in 150 U.S. newspapers. But these days, the Detroit News, which runs Fraz, only delivers 3 days a week. And other papers are shutting down or going online only.
Sometimes I worry that they are just so ingrained and associated with ink on newsprint that they're just not going to fit quite as well into wherever newspapers go next.
All comic strips are already online, but nobody's found a way yet to get the web to pay enough so that drawing a strip can stay a full-time job. Cartoonists are worried. At their annual convention last month, they held a seminar on the future of newspapers and comics, where Jim Borgman, who draws the strip Zits, heard from a lot of frazzled young artists.
Yeah, you may have a syndicated strip. You certainly need to keep a website up. You're probably blogging. Some of these guys have, like, stand-up acts. They're in bands that, you know, somehow cross-pollinate with their strip. One guy looked up at me today and says, you need a staff to do this.
Cartoonist Darren Bell has chronicled the death of newspapers in his strip, Canderville, and he actually has a tip jar on his website. He says the money coming in from the web, not just in tips, is only a quarter of his income as a cartoonist, but he's not worried about comics.
Comics have been around basically since the first caveman found the first cave wall.
One thing we're fairly sure cavemen didn't draw on cave walls is crossword puzzles. They debuted in newspapers in 1913. Will Shortz is NPR's puzzle master and editor of the New York Times crossword. He says puzzles will survive in books and online even if newspapers go away, and the economic impact on puzzle makers will be minimal.
Honestly, most people are making puzzles because they love it, they just love the process, and they're anxious to see their names in print. They're not doing it for the money.
Shortz pays his freelancers $200 for a daily puzzle and $1,000 for a Sunday puzzle. But since he publishes the work of more than 100 puzzle makers a year, nobody's making a real living at this except him. In Los Angeles, I'm John Raby for Marketplace.
One of the oldest names in women's cosmetics is being phased out in the U.S. Max Factor was founded more than 100 years ago by a Russian immigrant. Maximilian Faktorowicz had been a makeup artist for Russia's Royal Ballet. Anyway, Max Factor has been losing sales lately to CoverGirl, so its owner, Procter & Gamble, is discontinuing the brand. In the U.S., Max will live on overseas.
With their hair in ribbons and legs in tights, hooray for Hollywood. You may be homely in your neighborhood, but if you think that you can be an actor, see Mr. Factor.
In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great Friday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.